You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. As much of South Dakota strains under drought conditions, today we explore the impact of drought on rivers and streams. Travis Entman is Managing Director of the Friends of the Big Sioux River. Jake Gilbertson is Manager of the East Dakota Water Development District, and they're joining me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. It's just a stone's throw away from the falls of the Big Sioux River, if you've got a pretty good arm.
It is, yeah.
Travis and Jay, thanks for being here. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate the invite.
Let's talk about just visually when you walk by the Big Sioux River. If you live in the city of Sioux Falls, you can see a big difference in the water flow, the quantity of it. You can see things coming up from, you know, pollution and old tires and sort of how much is this drought affecting the water levels of the river? Who wants to sort of kick that off? Jay?
Laura, I'll start that. We pulled up some records. The state and the federal government and a number of agencies monitor water levels in the river for a lot of different reasons. And over the last several months, the very clearly low water levels that everyone can notice, we're running probably in order of magnitude, 10% of what normal might be. And for a lot of folks, this really stands out because just a year or two ago, we were that same degree above normal. We were running really full, and now we're running really empty. And so, if nothing else, there's a lot less water. So the things that are in the river, like the tires and the shopping carts and the old TVs, are now visible. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, they were underwater.
Yeah, just 2 years ago, it was blocked off. You couldn't go. Maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Now I've got my times mixed up a little bit because the pandemic just like froze the progression of time in my mind. You couldn't even access Falls Park, for example, when you came to work in the morning. Travis, just a very basic question. Can you pick up that stuff when you see it? Are there plans to, when you talk about river cleanup, are there opportunities for taking care of some of that pollution when it becomes visible?
Yeah. So with Friends of Big Sioux River, we've been doing a lot of these river cleanup events along the river here in Sioux Falls, but up in Flandreau and Watertown. And concerned citizens, other like-minded groups are more than welcome to have events like that. We've done 5 this year at about 6-7 different locations. And each time, it's a pretty easy process. You contact city officials. So we talk to the Parks Department here in Sioux Falls, say, hey, we're looking at doing a cleanup on this park along the river. This is when, where, and how many people we expect to have. And they're like, cool, we're happy to help. So it's been a real nice working relationship like that. And then at the end of the events, the Parks Department will come up and collect the bags of trash that we put together. So it's anyone can, go out there and pick up trash. There's groups like ours that have events or even can help spearhead an event. It might not be ours, but if you're interested in having a community event or even a family reunion and don't know how to get started with it, Friends of the Big Sioux River, organizations like that can help figure that out.
So I lost my car keys years ago on the river, and I just wait. My library card was attached. I just wait that someday, some year, someone's going to return them to me. Are people just dumping stuff? And when you look at that, there is a bit of a shock when you see the plastic bags. And you see, are people like actively throwing stuff in the river? Do we still pollute river intentionally?
It's hard to tell. Yes, people have thrown things just directly in the river, but given the recent flooding we've had, a lot of that stuff got pulled in from people's yards. This past June, we did a cleanup in front of the farmer's market here in Sioux Falls, across from Smithfield there. And because the water level was so low, we got 6 bikes out of there, a TV from the 80s, bunch of old signs. All of that was dumped there a while ago. So, it's kind of hard to know when this trash gets there, depending on water levels. But we usually see, pop cans, beer cans, plastic bags, utensils, things like that kind of get blown in. Or if we have some rain like we did yesterday, sometimes that just gets kind of flown in. But that big stuff has usually been there for a while.
And, you know, you look at the history of the Big Sioux River and how it flowed clean and had multiple, you know, different kinds of species in it. The ecosystem has changed. That, that can be kind of disheartening a little bit.
Well,
Jay, go ahead.
Yeah. certainly, you know, if we could go back to the way things were 150 years ago, the river would look quite different. A good friend of mine was asked several years ago, you know, what would it take to turn the river back the way it was?
Sure.
And the answer, well, simple. Everybody has to leave. I mean, development and the impacts of that are something that, that are part and parcel with our being here. We need to, we can certainly do a better job. Some of it is, you know, we didn't understand initially that, you know, just because the waste went away, that it didn't really go away. It just left our space.
It moves downstream.
It goes somewhere else. and so we need to get better at that.
Right.
But part of it is simply recognizing that if we want to live along the river and interact with the river, we're going to have to do a better job. It cannot take everything that we put into it.
It's choices that we're making.
Yeah.
We're making choices for better or for worse. There's an impact based on our choices. Let's talk about that when we talk about extremes and the growth of the city of Sioux Falls, new industry coming in, our, where our drinking water comes from. How do people think about the river other than a place to, you know, which the city of Sioux Falls, in my opinion, does a great job of sort of highlighting with the bike trails and the park system. You're often invited to the river, but there's a lot more happening. Talk a little bit about what, where water comes from and how it's impacted by a growing Sioux Falls.
This is Jay. I mean, the Big Sioux River, which is one of the sources that the city draws water from, they have an intake on the north side of the airport, starts up near Summit. The north end of up in northeastern South Dakota and flows down along the eastern side, picking up, you know, tributaries and whatever else comes along. And with that, anything that can get into the river along that path is going to be part of it when it gets here. We'd certainly like to keep that as clean as possible. And but for the city, in terms of drinking, that's just one source. The city also draws water from shallow aquifers that are adjacent to the river and that some kind can exchange water, and currently also pulls water in from Vermilion, courtesy of the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System Pipeline. And so they have several different choices.
So when new industry comes in, a new packing plant, an Amazon factory, when things grow, they when the city expands, more people need more water.
Right. Yep. And so when new industry comes in, you know, depending on the type of industry, they're looking at getting water use permits. So how much water can we use in this facility? And if they have wastewater byproduct, are we going to discharge directly into the river or one of its tributaries? How does that work? So that's stuff that you have to think about as we expand and grow. Who's using that water? And to your point about where is that water coming from? You know, right now, we're seeing pollution levels slightly different from previous years, just because of the low flows. But you know, we have discharge permits and discharge pipes going into the river from different industries. The city of Sioux Falls discharges, you know, treated wastewater. But we're also seeing non-point source pollution, which is all that stuff on land that gets washed in. After rain events or snow melt and stuff like that. So that, all that water is coming in and all those accumulate to impact the river and to, really affects how we move forward on who uses water and who gets to pollute the river.
Because you had a partnership with Remedy Brewing where you took surface water and made beer. How much work was it to make that drinkable?
Right.
I mean, just from the sense of like pulling water out of the river and saying, and now we're going to use it. It has to be treated.
Right.
Tell me that story.
It's a pretty incredible process. So we only took out 300 gallons of surface water over by the 26th Street Bridge. And it took us roughly 10 hours to make 120 gallons of clean water going through a reverse osmosis machine. So basically, it runs through a bunch of filters and reverse osmosis to make it cleaner than 10 times cleaner than tap water. It's as close to distilled water as you can get without being distilled water. Sure. So it's an intensive process, and this was on a very small scale. 300 gallons isn't that much. We actually just did it again for, we're making another beer with Remedy for Riverfest coming up.
Sure.
Doing the same process, and we got, it was a little quicker. Only 8 hours this time, but it's a tedious process. And if you had a large volume of beer, that would take, you know, a long time.
A fun educational exercise,
right?
But also, it sounds expensive to me, Jay. It sounds like something that if you wanted to do it for more than, you know, a small batch of craft beer.
No, exactly.
This is not what you want to be doing.
It was a lot. I was involved with the second process, yeah, we were able to get about a 50%. I think there we drew about 240 and got about 120 back. Yeah. The water was a little cleaner. Mm-hmm. We had a little better surface. And so the message there is, well, if the water is a lot cleaner, then even if we're running it through the RO units, it will take less time. We'll get less waste and so forth. So, again, it's a point of if the cleaner the river is, the easier it is to make beer,
right?
Or the easier it is. there's less work for clean drinking water. Right. I mean, the city has to treat the water. We do not drink just water straight out of the tap, or straight out of the river, or out of the ground. It all has to be treated. Mm-hmm. But obviously, the less stuff that is in it that needs to be taken out, the easier that process is going to be, and the less costly it's going to be.
Right.
Now, there are technologies available that can pretty much take anything out of the water. You know, there are places around the world that are using basically recycled wastewater for drinking water because that's what they have. That's all they have. We're not there yet, and we'd like to avoid that as long as possible.
When does it run out? In the last, 30 seconds or so that we have,
well,
Jay, how long do these resources last?
If they're managed properly, the resources themselves won't run out. What will run out is our ability to expand. The Lewis and Clark pipeline I mentioned earlier was developed because we looked forward and said by sometime about a decade ago, it was projected that the available local groundwater and surface water would no longer be enough to support continued growth. The city wasn't going to run out of water, but the next guy that moved in would have to bring his own. And so a new source had to be identified. Mm-hmm. If we manage what we have soundly, we can keep them going, but if we want to continue to grow, we're going to have to identify some new sources as well.
Interesting. Travis Entman is Managing Director of the Friends at the Big Sioux River. Jay Gilbertson is Manager of the East Dakota Water Development District. A little water conversation to start your day. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for being here. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.